Hello there. You are about ready to listen to a very special sneak peek of our Patreon-exclusive show, Spider-Versity, where Sal from Comic Pop and myself dive deep into the Spider-Man movies leading up to Spider-Man No Way Home. We begin, of course, with the one that started it all, Spider-Man from 2002, directed by Sam Raimi and starring Tobey Maguire. If you would like to join us for the rest of our Spider-Verse spanning journey, exploring movies like Spider-Man's 2 and 3 and The Amazing Spider-Man, be sure to head on over to patreon.com/onlystupidanswers and become a patron today. Now on with the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. But this isn't a normal Only Stupid Answers episode. It sure, gosh dang, isn't. So we're doing something special here. We've got, as of this recording, a mere couple months away is Spider-Man No Way Home. And if the rumors are true, it will be pulling from a litany of previous Spider-Man movies. Actually, we already know that because we've already seen a Doc Ock and all that. And Tom Holland is even talking about as this is the end of the Spider-Man franchise, stuff like that. So I thought it would be cool to do something specifically for Patreon. This is a Patreon show where we go through the original Spider-Man films in release order. But I couldn't do this alone. I'm not a crazy person. All right. I needed a fellow comic expert, Spider-Man expert, to join me on this journey. So I reach out to my pal Sal, say hi.
Hey everybody, thanks for having me, DJ. Yes, you're right, this is not your traditional Only Stupid Answers, but it is extra stupid because now I'm here to talk about Spider-Man.
disagree. If in fact I would say it is definitely much smarter because you are here. I wanted somebody that would be down to go revisit all the Spider-Man movies with me.
Anytime. So, yes, happy to.
But also be able to provide your knowledge and your wit. And so I'm very glad you were down to do this. You were the first person I thought of to do this with me. And so I'm glad it worked out. And as I was telling Sal at the beginning of the episode, is that I was planning on knocking out like a movie an hour, like just do a normal hour episode. And then I looked at my notes for the first movie. I'm like, okay, maybe we'll split this into two. And I was thinking I probably should run this by you before we start recording, but it's too late now. I was thinking we should call this Spider-Versity.
Oh, I love it.
Is it already taken? Who knows?
Somebody online
will let us know.
Here's the thing. You know what? There are a ton of spider-themed podcasts. I'm amazed we haven't created one yet. I'm thrilled that this is it. I say we claim it.
Now, here's the other thing, and I'm sure for some reason this makes me think of back when I was working at SourceFed, and I'm sure you've experienced this with your YouTube channel, where you'll like make a thumb, and you know, making a thumb is always just like tricky, and then you'll get a comment like, excuse me, you didn't credit me for my fan art. And it's like, well, did you credit Marvel for ripping off? Like, wait, this is such a weird thing for you to be mad at me about considering what you did.
right. Yeah, because that's not your image that you doctored
and
made into fan art.
You don't own that character, so I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. No need to get there. talking about years-old grudges.
True.
So before we get – we're obviously starting with the first Spider-Man theatrical film back from 2002. Yes. But before we dive into that, Sal, and this is a weird question. I was going to ask you, what is your first memory of Spider-Man, which feels like asking someone, like, when do you remember first learning about Santa Claus? It's like,
right? I do remember. Like, because here's the thing. Spider-Man, favorite superhero of all time. Yep. It's right up there with Batman, but Spider-Man edges him right out because he just looks cooler.
Yes.
And he's got the powers. The powers always trump detective skills. But I've been waiting for a Spider-Man movie my entire life, and I will tell you, my first exposure to Spider-Man, I think, and this is just because anytime anybody asks me this, the first thing I think of is a commercial for themed flyers. Now, these were these little, like, airplane things made of garbage that had characters, like, emblazoned on the side, and people threw them, and they sailed through the air. And I remember distinctively one kid in the commercial saying something to the effect of, "Get him, Spidey!" And I was like, Spidey? Mm-hmm. And so I remember being maybe even tangentially aware, it might have been the end credits for Muppet Babies that was my first exposure to Spider-Man.
Oh,
because,
dang.
Of course, Muppet Babies was a Marvel Entertainment property, and this amazing three-dimensional caricature of Spider-Man drops from the sky and then crawls towards you, and I was like, that. It was one of those not unlike a post-credit scene in a certain Venom movie where someone just looks at the screen and says, that guy, and then licks the screen.
Yeah.
I was like that, and I remember just being like, I remember being personally upset that some kid casually referred to Spider-Man as Spidey. Little did I know, because I hadn't read the comics yet, that's his moniker.
That's his name.
People call him. That's his affectionately referred to a title.
So many things to think of, like you looking the screen either erotically or wanting to eat the guy? Ambiguous.
Has to. I mean, I'm pre-double digits old at that point, but who knows what latent feelings I might have for the wall crawler.
I was more expressing my questions about the theoretical post-credit scene you were saying. It's like, what emotions going
on there?
Oh, what is
he doing?
Yeah. Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, we have no idea.
I had forgotten that, for one, it's easy to forget that Marvel was pumping out a lot of those. Like, it was his own animated production company back then.
Yeah.
And I haven't thought about that production logo sting until just this moment. It's decades I haven't thought about that.
Same here. No, it was like when you said that, it triggered. I was like, oh my god, it was like, it's blue and red and but that was tight.
Yep.
And nothing like it since. But yeah, that was the first exposure to Spider-Man, and it never stopped. And then I remember actually getting my first Spider-Man comic from a grocery store rack.
Yeah, back when you could do that.
And then finding out there were comic book stores, much to the chagrin of my mom.
Yeah.
And then that was the end of it. That was the beginning of the end.
The comic store, it can be a little tricky, especially when you're younger, trying to navigate, like, it's, especially back then, I think it's better now, but it had its own like little culture. I remember when I was in probably high school, and I was like, maybe I'll start checking out this comic things again. And I went to a comic shop, and there was definitely a guy watching hentai in the back office. Like, you could fucking hear it. It was loud. And I was
no.
Maybe this isn't for me. And it took me another couple of years to be like, all right, let me.
Yeah, that would be enough for me to be like, well, yeah. Goodbye, yeah. And just never come back. Yeah.
So I guess comics aren't my thing. I'm heading out.
Right.
So, and the other question is, do you remember seeing this movie for the first time back in 2000? Yeah. Almost 20 years ago.
Almost 20 years
as of this
old.
Recording.
Yeah. Yeah, vividly. Mm-hmm. No, I do remember, because I've been waiting for this movie. Yeah. I had been waiting for this movie forever, as you know as well as I do. If you're like in your 30s and you wanted Marvel or Spider-Man properties, not only were you growing up being told it's never going to happen, mm-hmm. because of legal snafus, but also you gobble up any piece of moving Spider-Man stuff you could find, mm-hmm. whether it's Electric Company serials or old 80s cartoons that have no conflict in them, mm-hmm. just anything you could absorb. So when I heard, I think I wasn't even really that plugged in at that time. I dropped off comics for a little while, and then I just saw the trailer. For me, like, I'm sure Wizard was building up, but I had dropped off, so I stopped Wizard and comics in general for like a good 4-year chunk, right around high school.
Yeah.
I stopped reading all comics. And so one day, I'm in the theater, I'm watching movies because I was a big movie guy, and trailer. And I was like, no way. And just, I lose it. Everyone around me is like, wow, that looks like total garbage. Mm-hmm. What a stupid movie. Spider-Man, lame. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty lame.
Yeah.
But I saw it opening night. I was there. I didn't bring anybody. I just was like, Spider-Man, we're doing this. I'm finally going to see this thing. And it hit every single note. Because, of course, I'm sure, like me, you're a Raimi fan.
Yes.
So you're watching. You're like, ooh, I know who Uncle Ben is. Ooh, it's the classic car. Ooh, it's the Raimi sting. Like, look at all these moves, all these camera angles. Ooh, Ted Raimi's here. Hooray. Yep. Bruce Campbell. All these moments are like basically just watching it as a big Sam Raimi fan. And you get the added bonus of it being the first time you're ever seeing Spider-Man on screen.
Yeah.
And you're forgiving a lot of stuff. You're like, whatever. I'm seeing Spider-Man.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Because I think and we'll get into this more, because we're obviously going to get into the detail. But I think some of the things that Raimi brought to it that were special were, one, is his ability to direct motion.
Yes.
Is I don't want to say unparalleled, but I feel like kind of unparalleled within the realm of superhero media, especially more modern ones. Like he makes Spider-Man look so fucking cool. Like the movement, and capturing the way Spider-Man moves, and then having the camera move with the character that keeps that momentum going. Because the movie clips along. Like we'll talk about it. Peter's bitten in like the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Right, no time, but just moving on, and it's like good, yeah,
exactly.
Let's not waste time.
But like Spider-Man himself doesn't show up until like 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
Yeah, about maybe even the halfway point. But you never feel that. It doesn't feel like some of these movies where you're like checking, like, oh, well, at some point something's going to happen.
Amazing Spider-Man. You're like, okay, when is Spider-Man going to be in this movie?
Yeah, because I was told on the thing. And he brings a lot of affection to the character that I think is in the movie as well. But I know for me, and just full disclosure to everybody at home, I think it was about 14, 15 when I first saw this movie, when it first came out. Same as Sal, sitting my ass in the theater. And this, I credit this movie as the first movie I fell in love with. This was the one, this was like my gate. Like I watched a bunch of movies. My family's, we didn't go to the movies a lot. My parents didn't like going to the movies or spending money or any of that jazz. So like we didn't go to the movies. So this was, I'm a teenager. I got a little bit of disposable income. I'm able to do this on my own. Sure. And of course we'll talk about this more as the themes of this movie unpack. 14 or 15, I am right. This movie is speaking directly to my adolescent teenage boy brain.
Totally.
Like there's a scene where like Mary Jane is waving to friends, we find out, but Peter thinks maybe he's waving to her, so he waves, and I'm like, oh, I know that feeling.
You know that. You knew it was before they even do the reveal.
Yes.
You know.
You know. You're like, you idiot. She's not waving at you, dumb piece of shit.
They're not waving at me.
Yeah. Like it's just a perfect, and of course the kind of like this superhero renaissance, like you, and I think like most people, like you're into comics as a kid, and then you're like, well, maybe if I want girls to talk to me, maybe I should start reading comic books.
Yep.
And you fall off, and then fortunately we live in a time where now everybody is into
it's
this
okay.
stuff. Yeah. So yeah. you come back, And so this movie is hugely impactful for me. I've seen it so many times. It's so many like I know I've never listened to Macy Gray in my life, but that one clip of that song is burned into my brain forever.
Totally. No, I remember laughing at that moment just because they were like, ladies and gentlemen, it's an artist that shouldn't be performing at all at this time. Mm-hmm. Macy Gray. I was like, Macy Gray?
Yeah.
Way to date the movie.
Yeah, immediately dates the movie. It's like this movie will forever like scream 2002 into your face the second
right?
she shows up.
They didn't even have to say it was Macy Gray. They could have just said, like, ladies and gentlemen, a performing artist, and then you know it's Macy Gray, but it doesn't have to say it. In canon, it's like, no. In the Spider-Man Raimi universe, Macy Gray had a much longer career than in real life.
Yeah. It's just like those. It's not as, it doesn't permeate the movie as much, but it's like those Prince songs in Batman 89. Like, this was the 80s.
Oh, yeah, no, you pick up that, you love Batman 89, you pick up that soundtrack, and you're like, oh, it's all Prince.
And I love that they didn't ask him to do that. I love that he's just like, oh, you want me to do a song for Batman? Here's an album.
right, here's a whole album.
But
oh, my God.
Anyway, this isn't a Batman show, this is a Spider-Man show. You know who to go listen to if you want people to talk about Batman movies.
This is true.
So let's dive into it. The synopsis, according to IMDb, for this movie is when bitten by a genetically modified spider, a nerdy, shy, and awkward high school student gains spider-like abilities that he eventually must use to fight evil as a superhero after tragedy befalls his family. Perfect.
Yep.
Nailed it. IMDb summary, sometimes a little shaky.
Yes.
Nailed that one. On Rotten Tomatoes, this has a critic score of 90% and an audience score of 67%. In case you needed a reminder, that Rotten Tomatoes isn't that old a platform. And so it's definitely filled with a lot of people like, ooh, a movie made after the 80s, but before the 2010s, boo.
I can't believe that. 67, I would have assumed it was a 90 because... Yeah. You know, everybody seems to love the Raimi trilogy, or at the very least, the Raimi duology.
Yeah. Exactly. We're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll get to those movies.
Yeah.
And the critics' consensus is not only does Spider-Man provide a good dose of web-swinging fun, it also has heart, thanks to the combined charms of director Sam Raimi and star Tobey Maguire. And of course, this movie is directed by Sam Raimi, as we've already mentioned, and written by David Koepp.
Yep.
And we're going to be getting into more of the cast of characters as we go in, but let's dive in. We open this movie with the thing that opened almost every early aughts blockbuster, which is a CGI credit sequence.
Set the standard. Actually, I think X-Men opened it, right? X-Men was just all those. Yeah, that was the first one with all the CG opening, and you're like, and then Spider-Man, they're like, let's use the PlayStation font and just get in with these webs and never stop.
Oh, and actually, I think this is pre the PlayStation. PlayStation font saw the success of that movie and like, well, we own that.
Right, we own that font. That's PlayStation from now on.
That's ours. We own that. Which I was a little bit distracted. I think it was PS3 when they started using that font, and I was like,
that's just the Spider-Man font.
That's just the Spider-Man font. What are you doing?
Yeah, so, very weird.
We open with the early CG sequence, or in this opening sequence of pretty much any David Fincher movie post this. and we have that Danny Elfman score, which is still great. I still, love it. Danny Elfman. And I got to feel like Danny Elfman is still kind of the go-to guy for
superhero
music, to the point where Joss Whedon used him in his beloved cut of Justice League cut.
yes, and I think he did a pass on the Avengers theme.
I think you're right. I remember that as well. Did he do Avengers or Age of Ultron or one of the Avengers?
I think he did Ultron. I think he did one of the, because I know there's three different composers that did the theme for Age of Ultron, and you can hear them all, and like, the
if you play them backwards while watching Wizard of Oz, you teleport to another dimension.
you end up in the Raimiverse.
Yes,
exactly. But no, the that Elfman score is still incredible. It only gets better with age, and when you get to two, it's like, oh, you've really nailed it. You got that Oz score, but just the Spider-Man theme itself, that set the standard for every Spider-Man theme from now on, because they were like, okay, it's all going to be choral strings and just operatic. Like, you need that kind of big, bombastic, like, no horns, just like you're swinging through the city.
Yeah. And a little bit of a percussive, almost like what you would associate with, like, jungle vibes, which I think, you know,
yes, going with little, the... Like,
yeah, going with the, like, the swinging and the, and you know, the concrete.
Well, the animalistic nature of the character and his opponents. It's like, yeah, no, Elfman really put some work into that theme, and you can feel it.
And now I'm imagining like a Raimi Spider-Man with Kraven, the Hunter is the villain, with a Danny Elfman score, and the whoops.
Raimi's Kraven would have been amazing.
It would have been dope. So. after those opening sequence, we open with what has to be a producer's note, because we have a Peter Parker's voiceover like, whoa, who am I? Well, you're about
Nobody
ready to
asked,
find out.
Here we go. Yeah, no, that never – that works in the movie. Like, in 2002, you're like, right on.
Yes.
You don't need it ever again. I would almost be like, can we cut that, like, in future versions of this movie? Like, we don't need that, because then you carry it over in the second one and it's like, whoa, nobody asked.
We especially didn't ask the second time. I'm not a big overall, I'm not a big fan of voiceover. I give it a little bit of leeway if something is trying to evoke a noir aesthetic, but I always, in my brain, I always have the question of, like, Veronica Mars gets a lot of mileage out of it, and I'll tend to forgive that. But like, and the new movie Reminiscence uses it, but Reminiscence does what I like, because I think, now I'm requiring myself to remember that movie, and I sure don't. I think we show who he's talking to in that movie. A better example that I know is true is we have some voiceover in Iron Man 3, which feels out of place, but then the stinger's like, oh, he's telling this to Bruce Banner, and it's like, great. You know what I mean? Like,
it's almost kind of funny. Like, it's like they did the voiceover for a joke, a gag.
Yeah. So fortunately, it's not like we open with like Peter falling, like, how did I get in this situation 6 weeks earlier? Thankfully,
wasn't always like this. Thankfully, we don't get that.
We don't do that. Thank God. And so he's late for the bus. And this is where I've heard this described, and I think this is a perfect way to describe it, that the high school is depicted in Spider-Man movies is not the way high school is. It's the way high school feels.
You totally nailed it. That is, I would go so far as say that's this movie.
Yes. Like,
the entire Raimi trilogy is a hyper-stylized version of reality where you can rent an apartment in New York City for $20.
Yeah.
Where your landlord will take $20 and leave you alone for the day, as opposed to just evicting you.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of that in this movie where it's just like, I need to work in the city. I will work at the restaurant. Like,
yes. Yeah,
I need to go to university.
Yeah.
And I will go to, you know, like, there's a lot of those things. It's like, I went to high school. I am the nerd.
Yeah.
You know, like, and he's the jock, which is why he looks 20 years older than me.
Yeah. Yeah. And this gets into another thing that that people criticize this movie for, I think rightfully so, is that all of the act in this high school sequence, all of the actors look at least 30. There's
no denying it. But I will say, first time seeing it, maybe even the fifth time seeing it, blinders. I don't even care.
Well, for one thing, anybody that's watched any high school set movie from the early 2000s,
we're used to that.
This is what we did. This is how we did
that's
things.
Right.
It's just the way it is. And maybe it's better than, like, you know, forcing kids to act like that tends not to work out great.
Right, they can work 14-hour days.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Harry Potter kids seem to be fine. Other than that, it seems a little bit dicey.
Yes.
And the other funny addendum to this is when we're on the bus. I guess the bus is going to the field trip, whatever. Next scene, we're in the field trip. And I like that the TA teacher looks 12. Like, he looks.
Okay. So I'm amazed. You're the only other person on this earth who's ever noticed it like I did. That was first time seeing it. I'm like, why is this teacher a child? And he is so much younger than everyone in the room.
Wait, pause.
And it's so weird.
Pause this movie. I know he's going to get bitten by a radioactive spider, but should we spend some time with Doogie Howser over here? How did he become a TA?
And he's saying things that, like, old teachers say. Like,
yes.
he has that, like, I kid you not moment. I'm like, oh my God, my history teacher used to say that all the time. But you're like 12. Like, you're a child. You're way younger than Tobey Maguire. And I remember I got into an argument with a friend of mine because he was like, no, he looks like every teacher. He's probably a teacher assistant. And I'm like, okay, but he's still in high school. Like, everyone in this room is at least 5 years older than this guy who works here. And I went on the IMDb. I couldn't find his entry anywhere. It was like a conspiracy.
Oh, but they couldn't confirm it. But I did, like, you brought up his little, because I will say his line readings, this guy's fucking ruthless. Like, he is like,
yeah, no, this guy's not taking any shit from these children.
I swear to fucking God, I will fucking kick your ass out of this school.
You will fail this course. You were talking to that woman's entire presentation.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how we listen. Where are you taking him? Where are you going?
You'll never see him again. He's not going to. But anyway, so to do a brief aside on everybody's age, because I was curious. During the filming of this movie, which I think it was filmed during 2000. It got delayed to 2002. It was supposed to come out in 2001. Gee, I wonder why.
The teaser will tell you all about it.
Yeah. We'll get there. Tobey Maguire, as of filming, was 26. Kirsten Dunst was 20 and James Franco was 24 compared to Andrew Garfield when he was filming Amazing Spider-Man was actually 27.
Oh my God.
And Tom Holland when filming Civil War was 19. So, like, not a massive age gap, but Tom Holland of them all is the baby.
Closest. At least he was a teenager.
Well, even then, as he's gotten old, the kid looks the same.
Yes. He's got a young face. Yeah. He really nails it. No, thank goodness.
It's kind of like when I'm watching Only Murders in the Building, and Selena Gomez is in that, and she's 30, but she looks 15.
She looks like she did on, was it Nickelodeon? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think Disney Channel. I think Disney, it was the Wizards of Waverly Place.
Thank you, Wizards of Waverly Place, yeah.
So this is where we get the brutal, heart-wrenching wave sequence where Mary Jane waves at her friends and Peter thinks it's for him. We also get Harry pulls up in the rolls with Norman. And
great scene.
It's a great scene, and one thing I like about all this, and I think because I'm used to watching this movie is just like enjoying it, like just a pure nostalgia shot. If watching it more critically, I like how economical it is. Like within 10 minutes, we get all the major players. We get, like, in that scene in the roles, we get Norman's relationship to Harry and how that affects his relationship with Peter. And you know what I mean? Like, all the information you need to understand this movie is in like this 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's a tight movie. Raimi is economically telling this movie. This is a movie that Sam Raimi, you know, Army of Darkness could never have made.
Yeah.
But posts everything, like in a post Evil Dead headspace where he's kind of like, I'm not making any more of those movies. I'm moving in another direction. Like, this dude makes a tight movie.
Yep.
Like, there's no fat. You can't cut anything out of this movie without it, like, losing something valuable.
And again, especially with blockbusters, like, ballooning into 2.5, almost 3 hours long. And it's like, yeah, you we can do this.
Right. We could. Yeah. We've
we
done
have
this.
The
it's
technology.
Been done. Yeah. We have editing. We can have economical scenes where characters literally have fun interplay. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember the Jetta line when Norman Osborn's like, you want me to trade in my car for a Jetta just because you flunked out every private school I sent you to? Like, that killed.
Yeah.
And I think it's because most of the people at the time seeing the movie in the theater were driving Jettas.
Yeah, they drove in on a Jetta. And I also like, and we'll get into this more, but like, I love Willem Dafoe. Like, I think this, as a kid, this was my first exposure to Willem Dafoe. Like, I wasn't popping in Last Temptation of Christ when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, he's like a lot of, I paid attention to J.K. Simmons is another one where this is my first time seeing him.
Never seen him.
Yeah,
J.K. Simmons, we need to dedicate an entire episode to J.K. Simmons.
100%.
We'll get there.
But like Willem Dafoe, like the way he's able to play such a heightened character, and like we get the iconic line here, like, I'm something of a scientist myself.
Oh my God, Raimi memes. Yes. Good stuff. That was in the trailer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yep. So we're at the presentation, and this is also a good way that, as they're talking about the genetically altered super spiders, because we now know
no radiation.
Yeah, if you were to radiate a spider, it would just die.
Just right. Die. Well, also, we're not going to have open displays of radiation between two gigantic cylinders. Like, we're not doing that. That didn't exist in 1964. It certainly, or 62. This certainly didn't exist in 2002.
Yeah, and listen, it does having it be genetically altered make any more sense to why it would affect Peter?
No.
What's the purpose of this second? Why are we making these super spiders?
Yeah. What's going on?
They'll devour
here?
Us all.
And so, but again, talking about the different abilities the spiders have, are like, hey, this is the ability Spider-Man has. And what's interesting is the only ability that's mentioned that's not a Spider-Man power is not mentioned by the person doing the presentation. It's mentioned by Peter, which is the spider being able to hide into its surroundings, which then Harry promptly uses to flirt with Mary Jane after Peter basically dares him to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. No, this movie does a great job of showing you and then breaking the bro code.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes.
Big time.
Big time.
But I do love it because, you know, it's an adult making this movie. So, you know, later when he's just like, you didn't make a move. And he's like, you're right. No. Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah. It's fair. I'm going to resent you forever, but like, it's fair.
I'm going to hold this in my heart as a grudge, but you know,
but
you're not
wrong.
But
then he does tear him down later, and it's like, oh man, you know, you got to listen, you didn't shake your shot. He took the shot, but you don't then go like, well, you know, Harry, he doesn't live on a little place I like to call Earth. Oh,
it's true.
You're living with the man for free.
Well, yeah, we're going to get into that. The fact that I kind of like the fact that Tobey Maguire is Peter. Is a dick. Like,
he's a total dick.
Yeah, he's an asshole. Like, and which is part of what makes, I think, the struggle with power and responsibility. Like, that's not a struggle like Captain America has.
No,
it's a struggle Peter has because Peter's kind of an asshole.
Right, right. Like, I think he becomes more of a jerk in two than one. But in one, he's the kind of jerk that David Cope is able to write. Like,
yeah,
Cope is like a. I like to think of him as a hack, although he wrote Jurassic Park, but he's just like, I need somebody to write this. Give it to David. He'll do it.
Yeah, and exactly.
Like, he what is his character? Da, 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 da. And like, if he needs a personality, he's kind of a jerk. Mm-hmm. That's like, I add that element to him. And Peter's just a casualty of Cope's shorthand.
Yeah. So I also like that Peter is bit by the spider as he's taking the picture of Mary Jane. And it's, again, it's another way for the movie to go like, hey, these are the two things that matter.
Yep. We're focusing on two things in this movie, spider powers and Mary Jane romance story.
Yep.
I love that scene. There's a great shot where she's just playing for the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And, I remember that immediately endeared me to the character.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those elements also that, like, I remember as a kid, like, I think the two things to as a fan to get adjusted to, and we'll get into the organic web shooters later, but also the fact that basically Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy have been merged into one character for this movie.
They have to.
And it's one of those, now looking back, it's like, it's smart. Like, it's one of those, like, now that we live in a world where there is an expanded movie universe where you could theoretically do both.
Yeah.
Cool, do that. But at the time, like, when this might be the only Spider-Man movie you get, it's like, well, here you go.
What do you know about... For Raimi, it's like, what do I know about Spider-Man that has, like, the highest stakes? Girl he loves, Green Goblin, bridge.
Yeah.
I got to get all those things in this movie, and I can't just be like, oh, and it's Gwen, and oh, she dies at the end.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to do that one. I do think I heard that David Fincher was offered the movie, and he was going to do that.
Oh, no question.
But I think it's good that they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is, you need that. This is a romance movie. This is an opera. This is not like your, this is not a Nolan Batman movie, nor is this an MCU Marvel movie. This is a exaggerated fiction. It's the closest thing to a comic book movie you can get.
Yeah, and I think that was the one thing that this movie did a really good job is capturing the feeling you had when you read one of the comics. Like, oh, this feels right.
Yes, it feels right.
None of them
even if it's
really
wrong.
None of them really, like, even as great as like the Tim Burton Batman movies were, they were Tim Burton movies.
Yeah.
And so it didn't have that same feel. Not that necessarily they needed to, but it was that was so fresh here.
Yes. Yes.
No, so true. After this field trip sequence, we finally meet May and Ben. And this goes to another thing I like about these movies is little humanizing beats that you're like, oh, I get these people as people. So like when Ben's screwing the light bulb and May's like, don't fall on your ass, it's like, oh, cool.
Yes,
like, they like each other, they know each other, they can rib each other,
rip
a little
on each
bit
other. Yeah, no, that again, more shorthand, it's brilliant. I think it's better here than it is in two. In two they do the same thing and it's just clunky. In this it's just like, you know, Uncle Ben gives his little speech, he likes to give speeches. Aunt May, she's cute and fun. You know, she does her thing.
Little
she
sassy.
She has the Aunt May thing. She's a little sassy.
She
yeah,
got a
you know,
little sass.
A little more modern Aunt May. Cliff Robertson, who I hadn't seen since like Escape from New York, is doing a really, really much more. No, Escape from L.A. I'm sorry, he's the president in Escape from L.A.
Nice.
But yeah, he's his Uncle Ben. Great. Michelangelo, we're painting the kitchen. You are sad when he doesn't paint the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, that little beat, you know, and after he gets the powers, and it's another great example of like, because I think that's part of what makes Peter a dick in this movie is he, in no sense, you look at him, he's not believably a high schooler. In his behavior, he is believably a young man that, like, yeah, man, if you've got fucking superpowers, you're blowing off, you're straight up forgetting about painting the kitchen.
Yeah,
are you fucking kidding
forgot
me?
Yeah, you're gonna play with webs more than you're gonna paint.
Yeah, listen, what adolescent boy wasn't playing with their webs anyway?
Especially with a can of Diet Coke.
And
Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper, we gotta get the ad plug right. We gotta get right. So, something else I wanted to touch on is why are May and Uncle Ben so goddamn old? Like, this is very much accurate to the comics when May is like old as shit. And I'm wondering if maybe it's because in the 60s you only lived to be like 45. So, like, May's actually only like mid 40s.
Right.
But the times were harder.
She looks pretty bad. I mean, like, even in 62, she looks geriatric.
Yes.
But Rosemary Harris does a nice job of at least giving some like life to the character and making her she's older, but she's not like she's not Marissa Tomei, nor is she one foot in the grave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be, you know, I'll say in canon maybe they were great aunts and uncles, and it's just easier to say aunt and uncle since there's literally no other family left.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, and there is a ring to Aunt May. It's like, yeah, why didn't Stanley and Steve go make it like the grandma or something? If we're gonna make her look so old. But again, you know, 60s, it's like when you look at we just talked about how like old these people look, but if you look at like high school photos from like your parents' high school photos, it's like, why were you all 45? Like, what's
going
on?
Yeah, they all
look
like adults. It's really weird. Yeah. No, and by the way, costuming choices. I remember in that scene specifically, Peter looks like he has an oversized shirt on, and it makes him look younger. It's just good stuff.
Yeah, didn't work on Evan Hansen, but it works here. also, so Peter comes home, and they're like, hey, you want to da-da-da? And he's like, not feeling well. Why doesn't he go to the hospital? Because we get, I think this is really well shot, where he pulls the blanket up and you see the spider bite. You're like, oh, and as a kid, you're watching like, oh man, that's bummer. As an adult, you're like, go to the fucking hospital,
you
idiot.
You got bit by a brown recluse. That is not going to get better. You're going to lose that hand. No, I think they're capturing that, like, we inherited this house. We have no money. I know better than to burden Aunt and Uncle Ben, like Aunt May and Uncle Ben, with my problem. Like,
I remember distinctly that day Uncle Ben electrocuted himself, and we specifically didn't call an ambulance because we couldn't afford it.
Just take the car. Yeah.
He was like latched onto a car battery. I had to knock him off with a broom, but his last words were, "Don't call an ambulance."
Don't call an ambulance. Ugh. It's tragic. Yeah. You're going to have to just forgive it. It's one of those things, like, there's a lot in this movie where you just go, I'm just going to have to go with that.
It just has to be this way. So the next day is every adolescent boy's, I feel like, probably fantasy, where you just wake up one day absolutely shredded. You didn't do anything. You didn't hit the gym. You just wake up and suddenly you're like, oh shit. And I feel like maybe some boys' puberty, it does work that way. It wasn't for this boy.
Not for me. No, I had to work hard for this physique.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of pizzas.
Yeah, hitting the gym.
Yeah, although we should mention really quick just that sequence where he gets his powers overnight, and we have like the dream sequence with like the classic Raimi skull. For no reason, his skull just goes, brah. Yeah. And I'm like, yep, classic
skull
Raimi.
Spider legs. Sure, do it.
Yeah, and the spiders are literally rebuilding his DNA. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that is so Hollywood. That's just like, that is, every time I see something where I go, why did you go so literal with it? Like the Broadway play. Yep. I just go, well, that's Hollywood. They're like, well, yeah. I mean, it's a spot. Like, why is Bruce Wayne hanging upside down in Bat 89? Because he's a bat.
And you can just see a producer being like, well, but how are we supposed to know what's happening unless there's a CG sequence that shows spiders rebuilding his DNA?
They always say that it's because that, you know, it's for the audience's benefit. I'm starting to think some of these people are just really dumb.
Yeah. I think that's a fair bet. So,
yeah.
He wakes up shredded. We get a little sense of his powers because he does that like dope little like wall kick thing.
Oh, he has that little run along the wall.
Yeah,
which like, I was like, that's cool. I loved that. I was like, hey, like that's just practical.
Yeah.
Works for me.
How many teenage boys were like, I could probably do that, and like fucking busted a hole in their walls trying to do that on their little stairwells.
Too many.
We also get, as they're leaving, we get a little, our first hint of MJ's home life. Spoiler, it's not great.
Love it. It's real, just like in the comics.
Yep. Yep. And Peter misses the bus again while he's fantasizing about MJ, asking MJ out because he's a little creepy stalker dude.
Yep.
And he's patting the side of the bus, and there's a banner, and his hand sticks to the banner. And all I could help think was like, did buses have banners like that? Like, I don't remember.
I've never seen that in my life. But you know, my school, like when I went to high school, my high school did not sell, like we didn't have like a, what do they call it? Just a big, you know. The big thing with all the
prom, homecoming.
No, homecoming, something like homecoming, where it's just like all this crap. And then I worked at a school where they did, and it was like the movies. I'd never seen anything like it. And
see, there you go. I was like, homeschooled. Wow, I was homeschooled because I'm a dirty freak. So like I didn't see any of that stuff. I just feel like if you have a banner like that, you're basically, especially in like New York, you're like, hey, please draw dicks.
Vandalize
on this.
Put dicks all over this banner. You're like, yeah, no.
It's literally asking for it.
Yeah.
So all this is going on. We're actually cutting back and forth with Oscorp and Norman's transformation. And I will say, I didn't really diligently read the screenwriting book Save the Cat. But the one bit that stood out to me that frustrated me, but I do think applies a little bit. It was basically like, oh, you can't have more than one like heightened thing in a movie. And it specifically used Spider-Man as a reference. Like, you can't have Spider-Man getting spider powers and the Green Goblin. Like,
Yeah, you did.
I will say, I do think, especially now, like as a fan, I like this because this is basically a streamlined version of how it worked in the comics.
Yeah.
I will say, looking back on it now, I feel like there's a way, especially with I think it's Ultimate Spider-Man, where the spiders are part of Norman Osborn's experience.
Yeah,
I feel like there's a way that we could have combined these two in a little bit of a more organic way.
I think so, or at least they could have saved at least one whole scene if they had. Like, we could have had the scene where he gets like ousted by the board, or gets, or needs to go back to Formula or whatever.
Yeah,
in the same building, back to Formula, but in the same like scene.
Yeah.
You know, like it's happening. That's happening upstairs. Peter's getting his powers downstairs.
Yeah.
Where it's just, we just save ourselves about 10 minutes. But then the movie will only be 60 minutes, and that's not a movie.
Yeah, we can't do it. So, like you said, while Norman's showing off there, and I do have a little bit of some questions about what is Oscorp doing, because
right.
They're making a genetic super soldier, and their big rival is
Quest
like an aerospace company, and it's like, What military contract are we competing for? Like, it's
there's a lot of questions in that. Like, when General Slocum shows up and he's like, "I never support your program. We have my predecessor to thank that." Who the hell are you talking about? You're making references to previous movies or characters and stuff. It's not even a comic book reference. I don't know what's happening in there. And I'm like, we're just we need to establish
are you an elected official?
What is this? What is this? It's really weird. I also love how we're making a serum that will make you awesome, or you can drive this very slow moving clunky thing.
Yeah, and this glider.
It's apples and oranges. I got a glider that allows you to snowboard through the air like the Silver Surfer, mm-hmm. or you can get into this death trap that goes about 10 miles per hour. It's like, it's no comparison. What's wrong with you? Take the goddamn glider.
Yeah, exactly. And this is another one of those moments. Like, I kind of wish, like I enjoy the MCU movies, but I kind of wish, and they would have never done this, remake this movie in the MCU, because the aerospace being like a knock, because we already saw the knockoff Iron Man armors in Iron Man 2. It's like, it could just be that.
Yeah.
And that'd be fucking hilarious.
Oh, I'd love it. It was Hammer and Stark and Oscorp, and they're all competing. And that thing that blows up with the guy, he's just like, oh my God. Yeah. Oh, by the way, every extra in this movie is a Raimi extra. And when 100%. I say that, not necessarily a person who's been in a Raimi movie, although you can spot every single one of them, but also just... you're at like a normal human being. I need you to ratchet it up to 12.
Exactly. And it goes to that, like, it feels right. Like, everything like that heightened.
Everything's heightened.
It works for this movie. So, we already did the back to formula bit. Strom, poor Strom, narcs Osborne out, being like, this isn't working out so great.
Yeah.
And so we cut back later. Of course, what is Osborne going to do? He's going to experiment on himself. And listen. I appreciate the initiative. I feel like a lot of our billionaires today would have definitely experimented on Strom. Strom would have been the
green guy. We got this big guy right here. Just throw him in.
Just throw him in there. And again, one of these humanizing moments, these moments that like stick in my brain, is when he's being strapped in to go in the thing, and the thing hits him, and he's like, "Oh, it's cold." And it's like, yeah, because that's what you would do.
Such a real moment. That's a great moment. That killed in the theater. I remember that being just like, boom. People were like, because it's all this tension. Oh, he's going to do it. We know he's going to be Green Goblin. And then, oh, it's cold. It's a humanizing moment and also just a really fun punctuation. I think it's actually a little more organic than the current like MCU. Here's a really heavy thing and then a little dick joke at the end.
Yeah, because I think I think something that this movie does well that I don't think... the MCU is always as successful as, because with the MCU, it is literally a joke. This isn't a joke.
No, it's just a character moment.
Yeah,
it's an outburst.
Humanizing moment. And it also works as a great contrast, because we see how vulnerable Norman is. And then immediately we see Green Goblin. And of course, you've got Willem Dafoe's face.
Oh,
that fucking face he has.
It's doing double duty.
Yeah, and it's one of those like... Which is one problem. We'll get into this with the Green Goblin mask. Is what mask could you create that would be as scary as Willem Dafoe's normal face?
Right. Yeah, it's a real dilemma. Yeah. They were between a rock and a hard place, because it was 2002.
Yeah.
And you cast someone great who is really expressive. It's tough. I remember being really like, I'd be willing to go to the mattresses about the Power Rangers helmet, being like, oh, what are they gonna do?
Yeah.
Give them a break.
Well, and also
now I'm like.
Have you seen the test footage of what they were going to do with the animatronic? And it's like,
so good.
That's great. But also, where would that have come from? Where did he get that?
Yeah. But again, there's so many of those moments in this movie where I'm like, who cares? You just need one shot of him just you do that thing like in Batman Returns where he takes the mask off and he doesn't have the
eyeliner,
the raccoon eyes.
Yeah.
But you just do that where, like, you have a cheap, shitty rubber mask that Norman just rips off his head just to show that that's how easy it is. Mm-hmm. Like, no. I also, I got, like, work from Optic Nerve Special Effects Studios, and I know I have 1,000 of these. Like, I don't know, but I would have much rather seen that animatronic helmet that looks like the comic book that could have captured his actual facial movements
and stuff.
I'm like, oh, what a missed opportunity.
Well, and I gotta think, I probably would have at least like, could we just shine a green light on his face? Like, I know people will be like, well, but isn't that Norman? But it's look at Willem Dafoe's face.
right. At least cover his eyes with like some googly things. I don't know.
Then you're good to go. Listen, just the big googly glasses and people are like, who?
Who's that?
Clark Kent who? I don't...
Yeah, exactly. Works for the greatest superhero on the planet. Why not?
Why not?
The Green Goblin.
Anyway, Strom is not long for this world. He's the first casualty of Green Goblin. And I also got to say, we get in this more in Doc Ock's transformation, but this is where the Evil Dead camera work really, like,
pays off.
You look at Tim Burton's Batman movies, and it's like, oh, he liked the villains. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not true here, but you can tell Sam Raimi has fucking fun with the villains. Like, he has a blast.
He knows he can go further with it.
Yes.
There'll be more allowances if I can go. I mean, with Doc Ock, it's like he made a different movie.
Yeah, there's a horror movie
in this movie. Yeah. But yeah, with Green Goblin, he's like, I'll just a little push.
Yeah. And of course, after all this, Harry finds his dad unconscious in the study. And of course, an expositional Oscorp employee shows up to be like, uh-oh, Strom's dead and the glider has been stolen. Who could it be?
Who took it? Yeah. Yeah.
So now we get back to school after the whole bus incident where Peter rips off that sign that probably had a dozens of dicks on it. we're in the lunchroom. MJ slips and Peter catches MJ's tray, which was done practically and took – I was reading a thing. It's like it only took 156 takes. I'm like, 156 takes?
It only took 2 weeks to film. Yeah, let me tell you, it sells. That was in the trailer. Yep. That was a great moment in the scene. Seeing all the CG in this movie, it would not have held up.
Yes.
Making it practical was the way to go.
Yeah, and I do think they use the CG smart, but you're 100% right. This wouldn't have sold, and we'll get to actually the one of the scenes coming up, I think, is probably the shakiest CG in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Peter... after that incident, finds a fork stuck in his hand, which sounds more graphic than it is in the movie. And this is where he discovers the organic web shooters, which, again, as a fan, I'd like the mechanical ones. I get that how they streamlined it. And honestly, I think the sequence actually really works. Like, him accidentally webbing shit is fucking... It's funny.
It's fun. Yeah, no, it works. I would not have bought this Peter Parker being able to build web shooters.
And I also think that there is an interesting, like... I feel like there's a scale between how scientifically adept we make Spider-Man. Like, it starts overshadowing, like, him being a photographer. Or him suddenly, he's science guy. Like, that's his thing.
Yeah, and I like that. Like, just for the first part of his adolescence, he was like, I was all into science. And I built these web shooters and I invented this web fluid. And then when I graduated high school, I was like, F this nerd stuff. I am going to be all about, like, photography and chicks and driving mopeds. Like, I am not... he literally doesn't invent another thing after that for a long time, except... Because he built a spider tracer when he was a teenager, too. I built all that nerd crap when I was a kid.
Yep.
Now I'm all about the other stuff. I just rest on my laurels.
Forget all the money I could make inventing this stuff. I'd rather be a photographer.
Yeah, I have a thing that can trace where you are based on my ESP ability.
Yeah.
Anyway...
So
but organic webs, it made sense. The thing that killed me was in the comic books, they were like, let's make it organic like in the movie.
Ew.
That I was like, are you kidding me?
Was that around Moreland in the original, like,
that was the other Avengers disassembled. It was before the other.
Oh,
it was this, like, weird doesn't matter, I'm not gonna get into the comic. It just suffice it to say, they made him have organic webbing just in time for the movie, for all the thousands of people that were gonna storm from the theater into the local comic book stores and just throw them away because the web shooters weren't the same thing.
Yes,
but whatever.
We prevented it. We kept it from happening. All right, mission accomplished. Mission accomplished. Yeah. So I think my big thing was some of my favorite bits in Spider-Man is where he runs out of webbing, like, mid-fight.
Yeah.
And we get a little bit of that in Spider-Man 2. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing we need, listen, just like he needed organic webbing in the comics, the other thing this movie needs, this is 2002. This is 3 years after The Matrix. All right? We're not going to have a super movie that doesn't quote The Matrix, that doesn't reference The Matrix. So we get our first fight with Flash after he accidentally dumps food on him.
Yep.
And for the kids at home, not the Flash, the DC superhero Flash Thompson, the bully played by DC Universe's Deathstroke, Joe Manganiello.
That's right. Yeah.
Who somehow looks older here than he does now.
It's really weird. Yeah. And thrown away. Flash is a great character, but in this, he's just... It's Bully.
He's Bully. I don't remember. Does he show up after this movie?
No.
Okay.
No. Just that scene. You never see him. Oh, I don't think you ever see him again.
Listen, after the beating he gets here, I wouldn't be showing my face either.
I wouldn't show it up. Yeah, exactly.
I'd be like, that nerd kid I've been picking on for decades literally handed me my ass. I think I'm going to call it.
Yeah, I'm changing schools.
Yeah, for real. For real. What we don't know is he actually had like a ruptured spleen after the hit, and he died. Surgery. So many surgeries. Yeah. So we get a fight. First introduction of the spider sense, which is of course done as Matrix slow-mo because it is 2002. And after, again, Peter just decimates Flash Thompson. He runs from the school into an alley where he looks in his fingers, and I guess part of his spider abilities are he gets microscopic vision. And he sees the little barbs form on his fingers, which as a kid I was like, cool, that makes sense. And as an adult I'm like, no, how does that work with clothes? Sense. How does that work on his feet?
Yep. How? There's no explanation. No.
What are the lifting... what's the word I'm looking for? How do those barbs hold his body weight?
Right. There's just so many of them.
Yeah, there's so many of them. And one of those barbs could lift a whole human being.
Right. Well, he has the proportionate strength of a spider, and each of those barbs has the proportionate strength of a leg.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, that's one of those things where it's like, we just put it in there because the audience won't get it. But nobody cares. Like the thing you need to understand, ladies and gentlemen, is the audience doesn't care to get it. They just want to see him do it. They don't need to know what it is. And it's really creepy when it is those things, when it's like, yeah, no, I have my gloves, but then these things like come out of the gloves.
Yeah.
So if I, you know, no, forget it. Yeah, it doesn't work. I don't like it.
Questions about holding somebody's hand. I've got questions, but like you said, nobody cares. I will say this is not the most outlandish spider ability. I remember playing the new Spider-Man Miles Morales, where he somehow the spider bite gives him the ability to also make his clothes invisible, and it's like
yes. Yep. Camouflage.
For some reason, electrical touch and wall swing, you're able to climb walls, totally down with, but also the ability to make clothes invisible. It's like,
that's a bridge too far. I think that's, you know what? Since it's in the Marvel Universe, I'm going to say unstable molecules.
Yes.
Invisible Woman's costumes can do that. Maybe Peter put in a good word for him at the Baxter Building.
Perfect. Like, here, I'll take it. I don't know how that does with the street clothes, but listen, it doesn't matter. We're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah, Miles Morales doesn't even exist at this point this movie comes out. So he climbs the wall for the first time, and he's understandably stoked. And I got to say, as an audience member, I was stoked for him.
Same. Yep. And all I wanted to see was him climbing walls, and we do, and it looks great.
Him climbing walls.
When he climbs up the wall.
Yeah, exactly. Climbs up the wall, is excited about it, starts leaping from building to building. And for me, this is the scene where it's like, ooh, this CG doesn't hold up.
Nope. It didn't hold up then.
Yes.
Like, I remember in the theater, people being like, whew.
Yeah. But, you know, listen, it's 2002. And then he experiments with his webbing, throwing out so many fun little catchphrases, up, up, and away.
All DC. Web.
Yeah, all DC. Shazam. Great. I don't know. Did they have to clear that? Whatever. It was a different time.
Right? Yeah. Well, they're 1 year away from the JLA Avengers crossover, so the powers were much more friendly back then.
Yeah, exactly. All the companies were coming out of fucking debt recession and bankruptcy and whatever. And also, apparently, Hugh Jackman was supposed to make a cameo in this movie, and the reason it didn't work is because they couldn't get the X costume. I'm like, where in your brain did Hugh Jackman in full Wolverine costume fit as a cameo, like just walking by as a dude?
Yeah, I didn't hear about that back then, but only within the past year have I heard about any actual conversations about doing crossovers.
Yeah,
and how they were just like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it was no like, oh, whatever. No, contracts, who cares?
Yeah, just throw them in. And it's like, no. Just have Hugh Jackman in civilian clothing.
Yeah.
That's the cameo. Yeah. He's not going to walk around in that skin-tight leather outfit.
Yeah, just have him in a white tank top and blue jeans, and we'll know. Have
and we'll get it.
Tags, we'll know.
Yeah. For the longest time, I thought that Peter said... I thought he made a Marvel reference casually when he's in the cage match. Because when they put the chain on him, I thought he said, I'm not the Thing.
Oh, nice.
But apparently it's unlock the thing. I found that out literally a year ago. So for 20 years, I thought he was like, I'm not the thing. I'm like, so you make a Marvel reference here.
Yeah,
make all DC references with the webs. Nope, zero Marvel references.
No Marvel references. I think there's even like DC comics on Peter's walls when he's...
Yep.
Which that's kind of fine because like it makes sense in the Marvel universe. They're not going to have a Marvel comics because
no,
that's
it's
you.
Fake. Yeah, DC.
Exactly. So anyway, he swings for the first time and totally face plants, which is another great moment because that is what would happen.
Yep. It's fun. It's a lot of fun to see. That got a lot of laughs. I still enjoy it. But him swinging, there's a great... speaking of like CG, they did nail it though. When he jumps on the ledge and he's got the web ready to go,
yeah.
When he moves it, the light bends around the web and the iridescence of it, like it looks really good.
Yeah. I think they did really
good
stuff.
Just one of those things, I'm like, ooh, that looks really good. Then he hits the wall, fun stuff. Good cuts too.
Yeah.
He swings... cut to the mouth, hits the wall, then immediately cuts to him running. Good, like it's just that's comedy.
Yeah,
that's Raimi.
Good pacing, good time, keep things going.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
As we mentioned before, because of these, he's experimenting with his new powers. He's playing with his webs. He misses painting the kitchen with Uncle Ben. It is the kitchen, right? That they're supposed to paint.
It is the kitchen. Yeah. Yeah, who paints their kitchen green? I don't know, but whatever.
What, they're old. Who's to say? this, of course, is an early hint at like the power responsibility dynamic that is so mm-hmm. key to the Spider-Man character.
Yep.
As Peter's taking out the trash, MJ's running out in their backyard, leaving her abusive dad. Probably mom, too. We see the dad. We have confirmation that dad is abusive. Mom's probably not great either.
No.
And this is a thing for me that sets these movies apart from a lot of superhero movies, but definitely the MCU movies, is we get a moment where it just allows these characters to breathe as characters and actually develop feelings for each other. Like we've been told they're neighbors. Peter's seen MJ as a kid. He's had a crush on her since he was a kid.
Yep.
Which, you know, just throwing this out there for the kids at home, all of you married your high school sweetheart, great. When you're growing up, maybe don't put all your eggs in the one bag. You know, maybe wait till you... I don't know a lot of people that got married to a high school sweetheart and it turned out great. I'm just saying.
Nope. Yeah, it's very rare.
Yeah, just throwing that out there. But anyway, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Play the field.
Again, I like the economical way this story presents this. So,
yep.
And it also allows something... this version of MJ is allowed something that we have yet to see Zendaya's MJ get, which is like motivation and a life outside of being into Peter. Like when she talks about being an actress and Peter affirms that goal, like, yeah, you would be great at that. And, you know, there's a lot of like, like a lot of movies, people fall in love with each other quick, but at least this movie takes the work to show you like, hey, this is why somebody like MJ would be into somebody like Peter.
Totally. He's the only one who listens.
Yes.
You know, like that moment when she says, I want to act, that got me. That's when the movie like completely got me hook, line, and sinker, because they got it right. Because Mary Jane is an actress, because that's who she is, because of her like abusive upbringing.
Yeah.
She like puts on a face, which she was doing earlier in the movie, which like we get. But when she, there's this great slow build where she says, I want to. And then there's just this long pause and then says, act.
Yeah.
And for me as a kid watching them, I'm like, say act, please, for the love of God, say act. Says act, but then she says, like, I want to act on stage. It's Kirsten Dunst, I really want to say, like, she is doing a really good job in this movie.
Yeah,
like,
agreed.
People really gave her a hard time after this movie. They were like, oh, she sucks. I'm like, what? I thought we were all in agreement. She's great. But there's this real vulnerability when she says she wants to act, and it's the first time you could tell she's ever told anyone in her age bracket.
Yeah.
That she, like, what she really wants out of life. And when he says, are you kidding? There's this vulnerability where she says, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
And he reaffirms that she should have said that. And she has this relief. And I'm like, wow, that's acting. But like the real acting in the movie, not like the acting she's doing for everybody else in the narrative. Wow. Like, nailed it. And that's the moment in the movie where I'm like, I love this movie right there.
Yeah, 100%. And I think maybe for younger audiences, maybe they were a little slow with Kirsten Dunst is MJ because again, she's kind of merged with Gwen Stacy. And I know in the comics, it's like, like she in a kid's brain, it's like, well, she should come out looking, that's looking like Megan Fox. Like that's who MJ is. But I like that, like, this is a more, it's a more human, more believable character. And, and having her wanting to act on stage is, how do I want to phrase this? A better goal than like being a supermodel, like, you know what I mean? Like it's a more, not that being a supermodel is a bad thing, but it's like, it works for this version of the character.
Yeah. Well, it's meaningful. It's this like expression of self and talent. And it's like a goal that you can set for yourself that like you can build towards, like that there's motivation there. And there's a journey she can go on in the movie that you can root for.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that stays through all three movies. And she kind of has her own arc while Peter has his own arc, which makes the relationship richer and makes the character richer. And I like how much the movie clearly cares about Mary Jane's story.
Yeah.
Which a lot of superhero movies just don't invest in their love. You're the love interest. Like, well, no, Mary Jane's a character, which is one of the things. It is important because you made the line about Flash. Spider-Man, I think, has the, if not the, one of the best supporting casts in all of comics.
Yep. I care about all of them.
Yeah, like Batman has like some of the best villains. Yep. But as far as like, and Spider-Man also
supporting
has some
cast, it's Alfred and Gordon.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically it. And not only does Spider-Man have some of the all-time great villains, but just Mary Jane, Betty Brant, J. Jonah Jameson, Flash Thompson. It just goes on and on and on. And they're all great, and they're all like relatable, lived-in characters.
And you can go on and on about their journey. Like, you know what their lives have been like, what their, like, you know, Joe Robbie Robertson's journey, like from high school till being a father.
Yep.
Like, you get it all, and it hasn't been a straight line.
Yep.
They all have that.
And while we don't get, like, with Flash and Robbie Robertson and this, we don't get that, there is still that, like, you can recognize the character.
You
like,
know it's there. Like, it's under the surface.
Bill Nunn gets, like two lines, and you're like, ah, that's Robbie, though.
Yeah, exactly! Exactly. And in two, you know it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But, yeah, in the first one, you're like, hey! Like, yeah. Yeah. You know there's the, you know Raimi knows.
Yes. 100%.
You feel that the director knows that that's what's under the surface.
This backyard thing also has one of my favorite exchanges, which again, I think in a modern superhero movie, it'd be like a quip or whatever. It's a funny moment that's not really a joke where she's like, oh, you're short, you're taller in real life.
You're taller than you look. Yeah.
I hunch. Don't. Don't. And that's great too. That's funny. It was like, I hunch. It's funny. And then she's like, don't. You're like,
good line.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. And this is, whether it literally happened to anybody or not, it is a very relatable scene where Flash comes up in the new car and she's all excited about the car because of course she is. Why wouldn't she be? Like,
well, no, she's lying. Like, she's acting. They had this really like true emotional scene where they're like, they're burying their souls. And then this douchebag shows up in his car that he was given for being punched by his parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she goes, oh my God. Like, she sounds like the girl she was hanging out with earlier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She is an actor. Look at her. She's acting every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, wow. She's so good. Peter's a dumbass and is like, oh, I guess I better get a car.
And he starts looking through the ads for cars. And I love that the wrestling ad is right there because that shows you that those sons of bitches know what they're doing. That there's a reason that wrestling ad is literally right there with the cars. Like, hey.
Totally.
You want some of these used cars that are only like a couple thousand bucks for some reason?
Yeah. And oh, well, you can also get some money for these cars from this wrestling thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so Peter designs some suit costumes. He's a pretty good artist, actually. Peter's a multi-talented person.
He's a Renaissance man. He's got a lot of different talents, especially the ability to make like $1 million Spider-Man suit.
Yeah, yeah. How did he do it? Listen, this is we're not going to do that. I do like, and we're going to get into this in a second. I do like how dependably shitty proto Spider-Man costumes are. In every version of the character, their first version of the costume is always trash, and I love it.
Yep, agreed. Agreed. No, it's great.
So he's designs those costumes. I want to say I heard that the artist that actually did those drawings was George Perez.
Heard it was either George Perez or Phil Jimenez, but like
either way,
comic book artist.
Yeah, it's a real comic book artist, and it's you can tell, and it's great. But it's also you can tell that it's so good because they do a good job of making it slightly believable. Like it's not quite per level. Yeah, exactly. It's like way better than Peter could probably actually do, but like still pretty good.
Right, like Peter, you can draw like this? You have a career.
Come on, man. you're selling your stupid photos?
Yeah.
He practices webbing with the Dr. Pepper can. He says he's going to the library, and Uncle Ben offers to take him. And of course, this is where we get the big speech about responsibility.
By the way, cute moment where he says, all he wants to do is talk to Peter. He wants to express himself with it. And you know it means a lot to May. But she goes, oh, I'll drive you. No, I'm on my way out. And he turns around and he gives her the thumbs up, like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to connect with him. This is my moment.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh.
And of course, you know we all know what's going to happen. And so even then, you're like, oh, I'm dying a little bit inside.
There's more character for Uncle Ben in this movie than in any Spider-Man comic up to that point.
And in the conversation in the car, it's such a relatable thing of, like, even if you were a good kid, which I think that's the vibe we're supposed to get. Like, yes. Peter's a good kid, but he's a kid. And so the hormones are bouncing around in his head. He's like, I got to get a car so I can get laid. Ignoring the fact that you have crazy super spider powers now, which will probably
complicate that.
Well, yeah. But even then, like, why do you need a car? Show her that you can swing from buildings.
Swing her across the city, dude. Go way faster than any car.
Moron anyway. But the Uncle Ben is the father figure trying to connect with him. And Cliff Robertson really nails the hell out of this exchange. And it's one of those classic where, like, both are kind of half listening to each other.
Yeah.
But it works. It's believable. It's devastating. And again, it's another moment where you're reminded, like, oh yeah, Peter's kind of a fucking asshole. Like, this Peter's kind of a fucking asshole.
Well, they're in more than two. In this, they're not afraid to let their protagonist be fallible.
Yeah.
And make mistakes or look bad.
Yeah.
Like, they're not afraid to make him look bad. And you can hate Peter in that moment, but still root for him in the movie.
Yeah.
That's something that you don't get much.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I think it's like, I think you're 100% right. And so he leaves basically telling Uncle Ben off, which, by the way, Uncle Ben is driving the classic, Raimi mobile, the 1973 Oldsmobile Delta 88.
Yes.
And so now we get to one of the sequences that is just burned into DJ's mind forever and ever. We go to this underground wrestling match, which how does this exist? Like, what are the...
I don't know. It's got a name, the New York Wrestling League, the NYWL. Like, yeah, it's just...
what politicians are getting paid off to allow this fucking nightmare, fucking hell circus to happen underground in New York?
Right? And it is well-trapped. That's like at the Garden. Like, it's that popular. It's got...
It's huge. We got the fan in there.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell is the announcer, which is fucking perfect.
Perfect. Octavia Spencer as the lady in the line.
Yeah, the desk lady who sequence where she's like, are you sure you want to do this?
So featherweight division, small fry. I remember in the theater being like, this lady is really good.
Yes.
Like, just never knowing who Octavia Spencer was, not even putting together who she was later when she was an actor who was in movies and stuff. I'm like, this lady was really good playing this real person. Like, it was so natural. Everybody in these movies are really exaggerated versions of themselves. She is the only, like, human being in these movies. It's fun to say because, like, it's one of those things that I've noticed since 2002, but now it's like, oh, by the way, it's like a real actor who, like, took this seriously and, like, just infused reality into this character.
Also, I had the benefit. I was at, like, a promotional thing for Ma that she was in, and she was there. And it was like, you know, it's one of those stupid influencer things, and you got to go take a picture with her, and I wore like a shitty Justice League shirt and my hoodie, and I go up and it's Octavia Spencer, and I'm like, I forget what she said, but my response was like, I'm sorry, I'm underdressed. And she's like, it was supposed to be like an escape room type thing. It's like, well, it's supposed to be a party, right? So you're perfectly dressed. And I'm like,
oh, thank you.
Understanding.
I thought you were gonna be like, I love you in Spider-Man. She's like, what?
No.
I'm in a movie, son.
Yeah, but I do love her in Spider-Man. She's great. You know who else I love? This is one of those things that I'll go back to my brain and I'll do little lines from it. And I don't know if anybody else is on the same page, but Randy Savage as Bonesaw in my brain. Just randomly, I'd be like, Bonesaw is ready.
Every time anybody in my life, it is currency in my house, where if anyone's ready for something, then Bonesaw is ready.
Bonesaw is ready. Bonesaw, R.I.P. Randy Savage.
Yes.
Fucking, oh my God, which, by the way, like, I don't know. I don't know if this is speaking ill, but then you see all the veins popping in that dude's neck.
Oh my God, he looks like he's going to explode. He looks like a human tick. It's horrible.
Yeah, It's a lot. There's a lot going on. But this goes back to the, how this under, he's got like ring ladies and,
oh,
and
my
also
God. There's a 3,000 theater going on.
Yeah, $3,000. Like as Peter's coming about coming out, the one guy's like, I can't feel my legs. You're like, this is not worth $3,000. Like, what the fuck?
They're gonna kill you again. Yeah,
it doesn't matter what waiver you signed. Now, and here's where we get into something that I don't think we talk enough about Bonesaw, is that clearly he has some sort of untapped ability that we're unaware of, because he's able to completely circumvent Peter's spider sense and slap the shit out of him with a chair.
Yeah. The way I always justify it every time that, like, you establish spider sense and then he succumbs to danger regardless, is that in this particular case, number one, he's not used to it. He's never been attacked outside of Flash Thompson, who is a child. Mm-hmm. The other thing is he knows where it's coming from, but he just got hit with a chair. The spider sense, like, you're in danger. I know.
Yeah, I know. I just got hit by the chair. Thank you.
Yeah, like, he knows it's coming. He's just not used to being able to get out of the way. It doesn't hold up when he's fighting Green Goblin and stuff, but for now, I'm willing to accept it just because he's not used to it.
Or
by the
even,
way,
or even like an hour later when he's able to dodge literal bullets.
Literal bullets or brazier bats? Yeah, no. Some of the best wall-crawling practical stuff is in this scene.
Well, and also
that shot.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, I remember as a kid when they're like cage match, I'm like, yeah, it is. I'm like, yeah, that's yes. Yeah. That's
cause one dude in the foreground cage.
Yeah. But it's a great, like, cause you know, that's just happening so we can do Spider-Man shit.
Right. So he can stick to the wall.
And also, we just got to say it, light early 2000s homophobia when he's like, great costume. Did your husband buy it for you? Like,
you know,
it
sucks.
For.
It killed. Like, it killed.
It did. I will say, this version of Spider-Man, not as good as with the quips.
When he does quip, you appreciate it because he's so devoid of them. You know, like, it sucks that it had to be gay baiting, but it was one of those moments where it's like, oh, he's funny. Like, thank you for being funny.
He tries. Listen, he tries.
Yeah.
So, I love the cut from Peter winning the match and everybody cheering. Smash cut, you talked about that in earlier, smash cut to like the $100 being like just scooched across the table.
Oh yes,
with the sleaziest promoter in New York.
Guy looks just like William Shatner for no reason.
Oh, he's counting all the other money.
Yeah.
And of course Peter leaves and he lets the robber with the bad bleach job get away, which
the embodiment of 2002 run away.
Yeah, so listen, we know what happens in the future.
Right.
Outside of that, I'm Team Peter on this one.
Fuck totally
that
fair.
Guy. But yeah, fuck the promoter. Fuck this guy. Who knows why this guy's stealing the money? Maybe he has a kid to feed. And I do like, and I know that listen, I think Spider-Man 3 is rightfully shit on as the worst of these three movies.
Yeah.
But rewatching this one, I do like that it takes a minute to complicate the black and white morality of these movies, that it's like, obviously we know what happens, and so fuck this robber. But
yeah.
But like in this moment, like, hey, fuck that promoter, get out of here. Like,
right?
Like, I also like, within minutes in the movie, we're going to flash back to the sequence unnecessarily.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah. Like, we forgot.
Yeah.
But like, I do like it because that like, because Smash Mouth is like, thanks. Like, he gives that kind of like.
Yes. That was what I was going to bring up. That in his facial expression, it's another one of those like, oh, that's a person. That's not just some random. We need a criminal. It's a criminal. It's just a little moment like, hey, we're not going to spend time with it. But this guy has a life and a story before he murdered your uncle.
Right. He knows to say thank you when he's helped out of a jam.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
And it's actually a really good bit of acting from the actor who doesn't get to do a lot in this movie.
No. And Toby, too, where he does that. He makes the greatest mistake of his life.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, like, this is me now. And it punctuates the shot or the scene where he's talking to Uncle Ben. And Uncle Ben says, these are the moments where a man becomes the person he's going to be for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Like, you're on the path now. Mm-hmm. Like, if he doesn't kill Uncle Ben, you're a piece of shit forever.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Because, like, it felt good. It felt good to screw over that guy and help this other guy.
Dude, that's a what if episode, man. What if Uncle Ben hadn't have died and that decision worked out for Peter?
Yeah. Well, then he just turns around and goes back to the promoter. He's like, give me my $2,999, you asshole.
It also, like, the cop comes in like, you could have, or no. Oh. I think it's the promoter that says, like, you could have torn that guy apart. Like, listen, dude, I could have torn you apart.
Right?
What were you thinking, not giving me the money? Anyway.
Yeah.
So Peter goes out there. as a really genuinely emotional moment with Uncle Ben, who then dies immediately. The second that interaction's on, Ben's out.
Yep, Ben's out.
Ben's like, listen,
yeah,
it's time. It's my time.
Yeah, you don't want to dwell on it, but it is woof.
Yeah,
gut-wrenching. That I remember visible tears in the theater. People who were not expecting it, people who didn't read comics, were just like, oh my God, they killed the poor old man.
Yeah. Yep. And so Peter, again, another bit of economical storytelling. He hears the cops talking about where they're chasing the car thief behind him.
Yeah.
And he gets a look. And it is interesting the way they're able to thread this needle, because we just had that moment of genuine sadness.
Yeah.
But that moment when Peter gets up and he's like, oh, I'm going to fuck this dude up.
Yes.
Amped as an audience member, like, yeah, you are, man. Like, yeah, that's what's happening right now.
Yes. Yes. And this the web slinging in that scene when he's going to the warehouse is just like, oh. Like, I remember as a Spider-Man fan, I'm seeing him do it. He's not even wearing the suit.
Yep.
But it's dark, cop cars, New York City, web slinging for the first time, and he's wearing red. I'm like, yeah,
yep.
We're doing this. We're doing this, and it looks good.
Smart that it was dark, so that it looks a little bit better than the CGI from earlier. And it's also good because it's a good character moment, because we're actually seeing him learn to web swing.
Yeah, he's doing it
on
good.
The
yeah,
fly. Yeah, and again, this is where the Raimi direction really like kicks in, because following the movement of the way he moves through the city, the way he swings, him landing on the car, the burglar shooting up through the roof, and him dodging the part where he almost hits that that overpass and he jumps over it.
Yes.
Fucking gold. All of it's gold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then he chases him to this abandoned, you know, the abandoned warehouses that littered these.
There's so many of them in the east side.
Yeah. And it's actually a very like Batman-esque sequence where he's like stalking in the shadows, which it's like Sam Raimi actually probably would do a really good Batman movie.
I'd love to see that. But yeah, no, that Spider-Man stuff, like where he does the upside down one thread sling, like, oh, you're like, yes. I remember that happening in the audience going, oh, like it was a horror movie.
Yeah.
Like they saw Jason in the background.
Yep.
Good stuff.
And then he comes down, sees that burglar is the guy that he just let go. We get the flashback we don't need other than for that great line.
Yep.
And then the guy tries to shoot Peter. Peter just snaps his wrist in half.
Snaps his wrist, breaks his wrist. Absolutely.
Yeah, he falls backwards to his death. That's definitely a manslaughter charge on poor old Spider-Man.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but we got to keep it tidy. We got to keep it tidy. We can't have him like telling people that he saw his face or anything. No.
Yeah. And so it is one of those, as a fan, as a kid, I was like, did Spider-Man just kill a guy? Did Spider-Man just murder somebody?
No. We have that. We have the moral justification pipe he trips over. If he wasn't scared for his life with a fractured wrist, he would have been alive.
Listen, I got to tell you, I think the leading cause, I think I did a tweet about this. The leading cause of death for characters in movies is tripping and falling. Like tripping and falling over ledges, tripping and falling onto sharp objects. You just got to look out. The most precarious one is the trip and fall into a table edge that for some reason is razor sharp.
You know, I was just, there's a show that's on Netflix. It's amazing. It's called Midnight Mass. Someone meets their tragic end against a table edge. And I'm like, the table edge.
The table edge again. It strikes again.
Yep.
Thinking about Jessica Jones. That's a lady died that way. So, of course, Peter comes home after kind of murdering a dude and finds Aunt May crying.
Rosemary Harris is weeping. Her unfettered sobbing with the Spider-Man theme. Again,
another great moment. Don't even need a line. You just let the emotion sit there. And I think that's where we're going to end the episode today. I think that's enough for an episode.
So.
We're about halfway through the movie.
Yep.
So this is going to be a two-parter. We had so much to talk about. This is going to be a two-parter.
It started it all. How could it not? We got to get into, and you're, because you'd be pissed, like, ladies and gentlemen, you'd be like, oh, how could you have forgotten that
shot?
How could you have not dwelled on all those Batman references?
Yeah, exactly. So here's the thing. I'm probably going to put this episode out there as a little sampler for what you can expect. But if you want the rest of the conversation, you should go to patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Sal, for the kids at home, where can they find you?
You can find me over at youtube.com/comicpop. We're almost at 100K. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
And we have our supplemental channel. We do more podcasts, kind of like these, over on a channel called Comic Pop Returns, which is in the noble tradition of superhero sequels returning. But yeah, we got this channel over there where we do podcasts every week, at least two or three per week. So check us out on both channels.
Dude, go over there. Give it some love. And tune back in as we talk more about Spider-Man, and let us know what you think of the show. Like I said, we're planning on going through all the live action Spider-Man movies. So tune in, and for those that listen to this on Patreon, thanks for being patrons. Bye-bye.